Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 55 of The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where we take the subjects everyone pretends to understand, Google them, then get distracted and wander off into a shopping centre. I'm your host woman, had her heart installed at the Build-A-Bear workshop, Hannah Farrell. With me is missing child announcement over the tannoy, Alexandra Haddo.
Eventually we got banned from going to the shopping centre, Hannah. The security guard told my mum that he already had 3 kids of his own.
And smoking round the back by the McDonald's deliveries entrance, Caroline O'Donoghue.
Hannah, I know what they put in the chicken nuggets, and let me tell you, it's not chicken. It's not even poultry.
Oh, is it nugget?
It's nugget, yes. It's the animal nugget.
This week we're investigating whether lobsters are good or evil, why we smear plastic all over our faces at Pride, and how a young boy from East London came to dominate the haircuts of every 10-year-old boy in the early 2000s. Plus we have special guest Natasha Hodgson in to tell us how smart women can enjoy horror films. Let's begin!
So Hannah, you've got a hard shell and you're covered in butter. Who are you?
The hardest shell out of any of us.
That sums Hannah up pretty well, actually.
It does. This week I am a lobster.
I am a lobster.
What is that thing from Friends? Like, you're their lobster.
It means that you're going to be together forever because apparently lobsters mate for life.
Not true.
What?
Scandal.
So I can't use that as a chat-up line to men in bars anymore.
You're telling men that you're their lobster and you're going to mate for life?
Yes.
Well, I don't think they mate for life. Can I just Google this?
And then it's about Rachel and Ross, obviously, and then Phoebe's like, see, he's her lobster.
Apparently, actually, a dominant male lobster mates with an entire harem of female lobsters.
Harem. Nothing changes.
He mates with each female one at a time in a series of serial flings that last about 2 weeks each.
I've been there, my friend.
Yeah, you certainly have.
I'm talking about lobsters this week because I went to Scotland, guys. And
you had a very wholesome holiday, didn't you?
Such a wholesome holiday. Mm. And part of the holiday, we were in North Berwick on the pier. And just by the pier, they had a lobster hatchery. Have you ever been to a lobster hatchery?
I have not.
Do you mean they hatch?
They hatch the lobsters there. Because lobsters come in little eggs, right?
What?
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
Like, I guess it makes sense now that I think about it.
No, but like they have little eggs on their belly, like shrimps and stuff.
Ew.
Or like...
No,
never seen this? Ooh.
I haven't really thought about it, to be honest.
So basically, this is called the Firth of Forth Lobster Hatchery. And it was just an old like sea container thing. And basically, when they find lady lobsters who are pregnant, they take them in and just give them a nice place to have their babies.
Oh,
and then
like
they take care
refuge.
Of the babies.
Aww.
It's like a women's refuge for lobsters, exactly.
And also, you'd probably be feeling pretty down after like Hank, the head lobster, has shagged you for 2 weeks and then got on to your mate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what they do there is they, as well as taking care of the lady lobsters, they carry out genetic analysis and support like the lobster stocks and local livelihoods because there's lots of like lobster fishing around there. And it's educational. I learned so much about lobsters.
I can tell. You're
hatchery.
Bristling with facts.
It was fantastic.
Hannah is visibly shaking.
I know.
I always think it's weird about lobsters that they're like most unattractive thing you could ever see, but the most delicious thing to taste. Like, who was the first one to be like, I'll boil this and see if it's nice?
That go. Yeah. And obviously lobster's like a really kind of expensive thing, aren't they, these days? Like,
yeah.
You don't kind of go to a restaurant and decide you're having the lobster unless someone else is paying, and then I might do that.
Yeah. I had lobster mac and cheese when someone else was paying once. It was
amazing.
Absolutely delicious.
Was it good?
Oh god, it was so good.
Oh, but basically why it's so expensive is A, because out of all of the eggs that a lady lobster will have, only either, okay, two conflicting figures here, 2% or 0.005% of those eggs will grow into a full adult lobster, which is like none.
Wow.
It's such a low. It's such a.
So
small
that's
amount.
Why the Hank has to have sex with the whole harem.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah,
that's what he tells them anyway, Carol.
And also, lobsters take ages to grow. Like a lobster that you eat at the restaurant could be like 15 years old.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. That's
oh,
really
I feel
odd.
Really bad now. Yeah. Like if they're just like coming to a pop, you're just like, oh well.
Yeah. Oh, apparently the lifespan is between 15 and 50 years. Generally, it's kind of estimated at.
50 years?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Insane.
Yeah. When they're little babies as well, because there were little baby lobsters sort of like in these tanks at the hatchery, mm-hmm. and there was water kind of going in and churning the water around. Mm-hmm. And we asked why that was happening. And apparently it's because if the baby lobsters were all just sitting at the bottom, like chatting with each other, they would start to eat each other.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they're like hamsters of the sea.
Oh, do hamsters do that?
Yeah, they yeah. bite each other's head off and
oh,
stuff.
God, that's awful. And apparently this continues into, like, adulthood. Sometimes if lobsters see each other, they'll be like, yeah, I'm going to have a go at you. Cannibals. Horrible.
Oh, God,
and
so they you're not to, like them anymore.
I know. And so they kind of kept the water running in this little hatchery tank. And then when they get a little bit bigger, they literally section them off into tiny little, like, trays
right.
of their own because they can't be around each other. Isn't that kind of
sad? That's so weird.
So yeah, I really enjoyed seeing all of this. And guys, I did my part. I sponsored a lobster.
You did not.
I did. I sponsored a lady lobster that had had her eggs and was going to be released back into the wild. And I named her Lorraine.
Oh, Lorraine the lobster.
And she got released that same day, which is nice.
Wow. And we now sponsor so much of the sea.
I know.
We do, yeah.
I've got a seahorse. Exactly. You've got a lobster.
I don't have fuck all, guys.
Aww. Well, next birthday or Christmas, okay. You know what you're getting? A killer whale.
Or a jellyfish. They're horrible, aren't they?
No, oh,
yeah,
please.
We hate them.
No, give me something cute like a seal or a puffin. A puffin!
Oh, a puffin!
Okay, great.
Okay, we'll give you a puffin. So the thing about Lorraine as well is that of the eggs that she, you know, had sitting in her stomach, they would have been there for guess how long?
110 years.
How old was Lorraine?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Lorraine is kind of more of an idea than an actual lobster.
Okay. 2 hours. 2 years, I mean.
9 to 11 months.
Ooh,
such a long time to have eggs sitting on your belly.
Yeah. I know, I'd find that annoying.
Yeah, really yeah, infuriating. Pregnant lobsters are called buried hens as well.
Oh, cute!
I know, because they've got little berries on their belly and they can have between 3,000 and 20,000 eggs.
Oh my
just
lord.
Sitting on their stomach.
That's
how annoying is that? Yeah, apparently fishermen can often tell which lobsters are female, obviously because of boring stuff like the tails are wider or whatever, but also because when other fishermen see that it's female, they'll cut a little notch in its tail. Apparently this doesn't aww. Hurt them very much, so that you can just kind of see it and be like, okay, she goes back in the sea.
Oh,
off she goes back
oh
in
it's
the
nice
sea.
Packed among the fishermen.
I know.
So the lobster that you probably eat in a restaurant is probably a bloke.
Well, hopefully, yeah. And also, lobsters molt. Did you know that?
Ew.
No.
Like, so rather than their shell just kind of growing with them, they have to molt it off. As in, they literally break it off themselves. Ooh. And then they've got the soft shell underneath. And then it hardens and they eat the old shell to get the nutrients to harden
lobsters
their
love
current
lobster.
Shell. Oh, isn't that nasty?
That is disgusting.
Aside, soft shell crab. Isn't its own species. That's just literally a crab that's just molted its shell.
Ooh. Oh my God!
I
did not know that.
Facts, guys. Facts.
God, I really want some soft shell crab right now, though. Yeah. So delicious.
One of the best things that I found was about the world's oldest lobster. So scientists haven't really found a good way to work out how old lobsters are. It's not kind of like trees or whatever where you can be like, it's got 17 rings on it. And also, they keep growing throughout their life, mm-hmm. like because they keep molting. They
so
molt
an old lobster
years
is a big lobster.
They're an adult. Well, generally, yeah, but basically, they just don't know exactly how to measure a lobster's age, and so the oldest lobster apparently is 140 years old,
wow.
or was in 2009. Whether this guy's still alive, we don't know. He was released back into the wild.
I was going to say, surely someone can't like pop him in a. Like seafood
yeah.
platter.
Yeah, pop him in a seafood risotto.
Yeah.
Lovely. It was a restaurant who kind of found him and were like, God, this guy's probably quite old, isn't he? It was a restaurant in New York called City Crab and Seafood Restaurant. And they displayed him in their case for a little while. But basically it turned out this guy, the restaurant owner called Keith, had guessed that George was 140 years old. He weighed 20 pounds, which is 9 kilos. Quite a lot.
What's that in stones?
It's like 1.5 stone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot.
Did they release him back and have like a Free Willy moment where he just sort of, but he just ambled over the restaurant owner because he was 140?
So the restaurant guy, Keith, had, you know, was talking to everyone and being like, right, I think the lobster's 140 years old because of its weight. And then he said, to kind of back himself up, I've been here for 12 years and that's the biggest lobster I've ever seen.
That's not factual, Keith.
That's anecdotal evidence, Keith.
It's anecdotal evidence. This is a scam.
I would watch the film of George the Lobster.
I know, I would too, yeah. The main thing that this whole like lobster thing made me think of, though, was just Pinchy the Lobster from The Simpsons.
Pinchy!
And I watched like a sort of super clip of all the Pinchy moments yesterday.
Does he just like turn up randomly?
No, so Homer wants to buy a lobster and they're really expensive, and so he buys the cheapest one and decides to fatten him up and feeds him like eggs and bacon and stuff and takes him for walks. Oh. And then he gets put in a hot bath.
I know, and he cooks him and then he eats him.
Yeah. God, that is traumatic.
I know. Yeah,
lobsters are delicious though, so do eat them.
I've never had one, you know.
Have you not even had it in anything?
I don't think so.
Well, We're going to treat you tonight.
So this week we have a brand new section brought to you by a brand new expert who will join us every now and then and who might die as soon as we get bored of them.
R.I.P. Richard Danu.
I still love him.
This week we're introducing Women Who Glow, our wellness segment, which will be hosted by meditation expert and disgraced Goop editor Dr. Jane Frail. We're really excited to have Dr. Jane Frail here, honestly. It's actually kind of a big deal for us, Hannah.
It is, yeah. No, we're really lucky because Dr. Jane is in London at the moment promoting her new book, The Power of Sit, How Sitting Down and Thinking Thoughts Can Make a Healthier, Happier, Wealthier You. And actually, I think she's just outside the door. Alex, do you mind going and grabbing her for us?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, how are you, Anne?
Yeah, good, yeah.
Cool.
Dr. Jane Frail, welcome. You're here.
Oh, hello, my wee darlings. It's an absolute pleasure to be on the podcast.
Oh, and we're so excited.
I won't shake your hand if you don't mind. I have very soft bones and I'm afraid they bend very easily, even with the slightest contact. It's a very rare condition. Okay. My bones are basically a plastic ruler being held over a Bunsen burner, dear, for the length of a double science lesson.
Right,
and
visceral.
Also, I've also just asked your friend to fuck off for a bit. Sorry, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, fine, yeah.
We're a swearing podcast. Guests,
oh, so. Great. She sort of breathed a bit heavily on me, and I could just tell by her big fat face that she'd eaten white food today, and I thought, that's a bit rude, isn't it? I mean, she knew I was coming and everything, and I can't be around white food, as you know, dears. So she's having a sit-down outside. I think she's crying.
Oh, I suppose that's fine.
Yeah, so, no, we can go without Alex. That's fine.
You're here and Hannah has some questions.
Yeah, so Dr. Frail, you're here today to teach us how to meditate.
I am, dear. Now, I'm sure the both of you know what step one is in any successful meditation plan. What is it?
I did have a quick read of your book. Is that emptying your mind?
It's that like being yourself?
No, girls. Step one to being a successful meditation person and having a successful meditation plan is having an enema.
Sorry, an enemy?
An enema. A colonic. A hose up your shithole.
Oh, okay. Is that necessary then, to meditate?
Oh, darling, if you haven't had a proper go with a shit pipe, your meditation will be about as useful as a fucking owl with a cricket bat. So book your colonic from your nearest day spa or health centre or Armenian butchers and make sure you only meditate within a 12-hour window of getting your arsehole completely flushed out, or else the whole practice is fucking useless.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Jane, and that does sound great, but everything I've read about meditation, it's more about like incorporating it into your daily life and making a space for everyday reflection.
Aye, you're dead right if you're a fucking pussy. But how you're supposed to find that space in your everyday life for reflection if your arse is backed up with Turkish delight?
So you would recommend daily colonics then?
Aye, daily, yes. It's absolutely useless to expect to successfully meditate otherwise.
Well, Dr. Jane, your publicist is waving violently at me through the door to indicate that we're out of time. And you must be getting to your next press appointment. You seem to be quite busy.
Oh, I'm very busy, dear. I've got to go and put a shitpipe up Dan Wooten from The Sun.
Okay, so yeah, very best with your book, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Would you like a colonic right here, dear?
No, but if you can send Alex back in, that would be good.
Oh, that bloody fat-faced devil. Okay.
Come on, you carb-loathing monstrosity.
God, that was weird, guys. How did she know I had some raw dough for lunch?
Intuition, I guess. I mean, she's got no shit left in her body, so
she
I suppose...
She could probably hear it.
Yeah.
That's true, actually, yeah. If you've got no shit, you use more percentage of your brain, don't you?
That's the theory.
Yes. Caroline, if you had to name your favourite Mariah Carey flop, excluding her belly flop into the pool for her 1993 holiday to Corfu, what would you say it was?
Ugh, everyone knows the answer to that. It's Crossroads. No, I'm sorry. What was the other failed movie that came out that year by a pop star? Glitter!
Hey!
So good. You know, there's still some people who maintain that that movie only flopped because it came out the weekend 9/11 happened.
Wow. Really? I've never heard of this movie.
Yeah,
really?
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah,
apparently it's awful.
It is dog shit. But what I'm actually here to talk about is Glitter the Substance.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite, what is it?
Animal, mineral, vegetable?
No, ooh. It's like bits of plastic, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's bits of plastic. So it's typical for like any sort of like aesthetic thing we ever cover on this show. Something that was done in ancient history in some weird way, which technically counts, but then was done again recently in the post-war period. So the Egyptians smashed up beetles.
No.
I know, because you know their sort of shells are all
kind
of shiny.
Yeah, they're kind of shiny.
The Egyptians were so camp. I love
they
it.
Were. They were really camp. They also put henna on their fingernails, I learned today.
Oh.
And then, yeah, people kind of use sort of rhinestones and sequins and that kind of thing. And they had sort of like a glass glitter that they used. But then during World War II, this guy discovered that he could just mash up loads of plastic and industrialise that process and sell it as glitter. And that's what we have now.
Wow. God, it makes you look so good on a night out.
It really fucking does.
And how did it help the war effort?
It made everyone just a bit more fabulous, I suppose. Just like, I suppose that's what Blitz Spirit really is. It's actually a misprint. It's Glitz Spirit. But what I'm actually properly fascinated about glitter is sort of like what it means culturally speaking.
Oh, I always associate it with pride.
Yeah, no, as do I. And I think we sort of, any kind of a, it's sort of a very quick and easy way of signifying to people that you're kind of down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody who's got glitter all over their face like voted against gay marriage.
Yes, right? You're totally right. Or like Brexit or anything like that, I don't think.
Right? It's sort of a weird symbol of being like, I have put sort of like a weird sequin-y thing on my face.
Yeah.
And that shows you that I am cool with men kissing.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? And I sort of, that's the bit I'm really fascinated by, because you don't think that about someone's got a little eyeshadow on, really. That could just be shit eyeshadow, you know?
Someone's wearing a scarf.
Yeah.
Scarf's a scarf.
Scarves have no politics, as far as I'm aware.
Mm.
So I had a little dig into sort of the cultural history of glitter. And the biggest kind of moment glitter ever had in culture so far is the 1970s when we had glam rock.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So glam rock is said to have made its first official debut when Mark Bolan of T-Rex, who is someone I thought about never before today, but then ended up on a real deep dive with Mr. Bolan, R.I.P.
I have snogged somebody on his grave.
What?
Not That's on his grave.
Fucking weird.
Not on his grave. Like, it's in Putney in southwest London where he crashed into the tree, and there's still always like flowers there and a little grave. And I stopped because I loved Billy Elliot, the film, and the soundtrack's all by T-Rex, and that's how I got into Mark Bolan. I was like, oh my God, Mark Bolan's grave. And then I snogged a boy. Who I was with at the time.
It's quite an aside.
Sorry, anyway, carry on.
No, it's quite an image to put in my head. Yeah, he is sort of like Britain's James Dean in a way. Like, died young in a terrible accident.
27 Club, I think.
Was he?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, jeez. And like James Dean, he had a sort of a really ambiguously sexual beauty.
Mm.
So his first ever appearance on Top of the Pops, he is sort of got this beautiful, long, curly black hair. He's got these really, like, full lips, these lovely bone structure, wearing this kind of black satin shirt that's very now, actually. And he's got glitter under his eyes. And he plays the song called Hot Love, and it's like a pretty fine 70s rock song.
Yeah.
But in that moment, in that cultural moment, it was sort of the debut of glam rock on a mainstream way.
Right, okay.
And so very soon afterwards, David Bowie started doing his Ziggy Stardust era, which was all about sort of glitter, but not just glitter. It was sort of like
his show started incorporating like mime and like different acts on stage, which was, it was basically like blowing up what rock music could be. This right. thing that had yeah. become super, super masculine and making it like all about sort of bending the rules and, you know, what is gender? What does masculine mean? What does feminine mean? Which is so weird because it's a moment that we're having now, really.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I feel like we're not doing it in as much fun a way.
There's not yeah. as much glitter now, I don't think.
All we care about now is politics. Making people fight on like sort of Channel 4.
Yeah.
And rather than just celebrating the brilliance of sort of swaying within margins, all with this sort of weird yeah. little tool that a child can afford, you know?
Yeah.
And then where that came from, so David Bowie and all them were sort of borrowing from this sort of cabaret culture, right? Which started in Germany with the Weimar Republic. I don't know if you guys have seen like Cabaret or any of those.
I haven't actually seen it, but I do know about it and stuff.
It's a really, really good movie. So yeah. these people were like, and other sort of like cabaret cultures that were cropping up all over the place. So Weimar Republic, sort of pre-World War II, pre-Nazi regime, Germany.
The good old days.
The good old days. But, you know, it was horrible because it was like, horrible mass unemployment and all this stuff, but there was also this nightclub culture that was emerging for the first time where like people were, you know, openly bisexual, people were openly gender ambiguous, there was all these performers that would like perform in the nude, and it was all about sort of like subverting the norm, and their costumes were all about glittering. It was all about sequins.
Wow.
So it's kind of like the people who run nightlife, it's their job to sparkle, but it's also like their job to like invert everything that we think of as normal.
Yeah.
And so unofficially, glitter became their uniform that we could then all sort of like, if they're the generals of subverting things, then like
we can sort of take a piece of it.
Yeah, we're the foot soldiers. And when you put glitter on, that's kind of what you're doing. You're like, let's sort of turn things upside down culturally.
Yeah.
For a minute. And that's what I think is so fucking cool about glitter, because it makes me happy.
It makes me happy as well. And you can kind of go out in like a fairly normal outfit, like a going out outfit, and it'll be fine. But put a bit of glitter on your face or on your hair or on your chest or whatever, and it's like, wow, we're going jazzy. Like, it like adds a new bit of like,
it adds a level of daringness.
Yeah.
As well. Same with any kind of face paint or clip-on hair extensions or whatever it is. It like sort of makes you feel like you're sort of another kind of a creature almost. If it's night and you're out and you've got this face full of crap on, then like,
it
does sort of like give you a bravery, doesn't it?
And it does.
Yeah, it's kind of a self-awareness, isn't it? Of being like, I'm on a night out. I've made an effort to put glitter on. I know I've got glitter on. You know I've got glitter on.
You know
no
I'm up for
No one has
laugh.
To pretend. Like,
yeah. And it is like a mini, okay, I don't want to get too like pretentious in a way, but it is like a mini sort of armour of like, fuck you, I'm having a great night. Like, and it is kind of, I went to Sync the Pink recently, which is like a, if anyone doesn't know, it's a big, it was on Pride and it's a big sort of drag queen night, get celebration of all sexualities. And I had loads and loads of pink glitter on my eyes and I just felt amazing.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, same. Yeah. I went to a festival a few weeks ago and I had like a full face of face paint with glitter all over and in my hair and stuff. And you do feel like not yourself. You like feel taken outside of the normal realm because you don't, I think part of it as well, that you don't have that in your normal life. You don't go into work with like glitter in your hair. Or
I know,
whatever.
When you've got it on, you're like, why do I not always wear this? Like, it's amazing.
One thing I want to ask you guys about though, because the last time I encountered glitter, it was at my friend's house party and someone brought glitter, but it was the glitter that was like, you have the glue and then you have the glitter separately.
Yes.
And in that context, it felt really strange because we weren't going on a night out or anything. We were just kind of like in her flat, like chatting about stuff.
Yeah.
And then everyone had to have glitter on their faces. And by the way, glitter all over her flat.
We
knew
flat
like five times.
That is
never going anywhere.
It's like sand.
No, it's never going to leave. It's never going to leave. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of felt a bit like it was out of context there.
But did you feel like it lifted the mood of the night?
For some people, but I was kind of just like, oh.
Did it feel like enforced fun for you?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's the problem.
Hope she doesn't listen to this podcast.
I know,
I don't think she does.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, I definitely think you could do the same with like transfer tattoos. Sometimes I just sort of bring them over to a mate's house just for the for the laugh sometimes.
I got one of them in a restaurant the other day.
Did you?
And then I had to go into a very flashy men's mag the next day and I had chicken sours written on my hand. Transfer
that
tattoo.
Is great.
Because I guess, it is saying like, we're here to party, but if you're kind of not there to party, you're there to like eat some dips and like chat to some new people who you don't know, then it kind of felt a bit like...
It does seem like a misappropriation of glitter,
Mm.
I think we should all endeavour to have a bit more glitter in our lives, though.
I agree. Very agree. Hard agree. What I also find very interesting is the practice of glitter bombing. What's that?
Oh, yes. I've heard of this, but I'm not totally sure what it is.
So it sort of started when LGBT activists would throw glitter at right-wing politicians who were trying to deny them their rights.
Oh, this is great. Yeah,
People like Newt Gingrich, all the right-wing American politicians sound so evil by their
name. They sound so like
Newt Gingrich.
I was about to say Harry Potter evil, yeah.
Yeah, they really do. It's very nominative determinism. Michelle Bachmann, who was one of the leading members of the Tea Party, she's been glitter bombed a bunch.
Great.
Which I love.
It's such a wonderful way of like making them feel embarrassed by something that should be fabulous.
Like, harmless, like, isn't it? Yeah. And be like, but they'll never get it out of their head.
Totally, yeah. And I love that it's been co-opted by the LGBT community because like it's very much like, there's something about the fact that it's so beautiful, but also you can't get it off. It's you can outrun us no matter how hard you try.
Yeah.
Like this, and the judgment of this will literally stick to your skin and everyone will see.
You'll be finding
really
us in your bum crack for 4 days.
You're going to shit glitter whether you like it or not, Michelle.
Yeah.
And then there was that sort of famous thing where you could send glitter to your enemies. Do you remember that?
Oh,
there was a website for that.
I know, like, a woman that did that to her cheating boyfriend.
No way.
And sent it to a big envelope to his work, and it was full of glitter because it just goes everywhere.
And then every time anyone in the office saw glitter, they were like, "Oh, Henry,
cheating bastard, Henry."
Totally, yeah. I mean, that was like set up by someone who was just doing it to like have a laugh and make a few quid. But after a while, they got so exhausted by requests, they were like, "I'm not doing this anymore. It's not even worth the fucking $5 or whatever."
Yeah.
Also, you know, glitter like microbeads has become one of those things that like we're supposed to not care about anymore or not do anymore because it's bad for the environment.
Because it is made
of plastic.
Let us have glitter.
I don't want glitter if it's killing fish. I'm sorry. Like surely there's like biodegradable.
No,
glitter.
Let's tell China to stop pumping tons of plastic into the sea and let's have pretty eyes.
I also agree with Alex.
Really? Oh, God.
No, see, the thing is, okay, I'm
all
about...
Of all the things, glitter is the least, you know.
Yeah, you use, like, what, a gram of it twice a year.
Yeah.
Come on. But, so I just think that, this is my sort of an aside that I've been thinking about for a while. I think the responsibility to be a conscious consumer seems to always fall on women and what women like.
Yeah.
So face washes, microbeads, women, get rid of them. Glitter, get rid of that. Fur, if you have, like, an 80-year... for a coat, people will still judge you for it even though the animal is long, long dead, but no one is throwing blood on men's leather. You know what I mean? I feel like women are more likely to feel guilty and therefore like people will pick on them more about
their
things.
But also that's because people make more beauty products and more kind of like, you know, skincare products for women because we've been told to beautify ourselves.
That's true.
And then to sell them, they have to make them more interesting and put more like different kind of bits in them.
And that is definitely true. And I definitely think that things like microbeads, we don't need them. And they were just sort of put in as a sort of a bit of a laugh anyway, as you say, just to make a novelty. And I definitely think that when it comes to tampons, we should all be making conscious efforts to phase them out of our cycles because that is a massive landfill. But I think things like glitter, as I say, it's 2 grams a couple of times a year. Is it really
hurting
it's fine the dolphins?
If that, And also the dolphins would look fabulous with glitter. I say we combine the tampons and the glitter and we all go to Houses of Parliament, stuff a load of glitter up ourselves, then a tampon, pull the tampon out like a sort of party popper and glitter period all over there.
Oh, that would be so good.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Yes. I'm down with that responsible use of glitter.
Yeah, fine. That would be excellent.
Agreed. We've solved the problem.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Alex, you look like all your Christmases have come at once today. Why is that?
Find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life, Caroline. I've decided to talk about my favourite person in the world, bar you two, obviously.
Thank you.
David Beckham. Now, I know that usually we have to teach each other about something you don't know anything about, but I challenge you in this section to ask me anything about David Beckham, and I'm fairly confident. I mean, try not to go too obscure first. Warm me up.
Not like, what did he have for dinner in March 1992 on Thursday?
He would have only been 20. He would have been 19, so probably. Although he was at United's training camp, so he probably was eating something very good.
Do they have good food there, do you think?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah?
Maybe not in 92. I bet nowadays it's like super, you know.
Yeah, what kind of thing though?
Oh, just like vegetables, chicken, you know.
Chicken.
Oh, very boring.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So for our international listeners who somehow might not have heard of David Beckham, or even for our UK listeners who may not have heard of him.
Okay,
somehow,
let me give like a little ode to David Beckham.
Do you want to do a bit of background?
If you don't know who David Beckham is, you know, I don't know who you are. But also, if you don't, fine. David Beckham was a footballer, but now he's so much more than that. He is the nation's sweetheart. He was a footballer. He married Posh Spice from the Spice Girls, Victoria Beckham, Victoria Adams at the time. And they've got four lovely children together. And he's just, I mean, I've honestly loved him since I was 10. That's why I support Manchester United.
Aww.
Because I just loved him. I mean, I did fancy him, sure. But I just feel like everybody can't help but love him. And even, you know, me and Caroline have this thing where we're like, what could the Beckhams do that would make you hate them? And I don't know what they could do.
It'd have to be pretty severe. And it would have to be a lot of evidence for it. It would have to be like something on tape.
Yeah. That of him being like racist or something.
No, he'd have to literally be taking a piss on those Thai boys that rescued from the cave. That would be the level.
Even that, I'd be like, he was having a laugh.
They loved it. The thing about David Beckham, which is so interesting, is that he's aging the way Brad Pitt was supposed to age.
Yes.
And he's getting the public profile that Jamie Oliver was supposed to get.
Yes! Oh my God, I could not have put it better.
He is getting all their Christmases at once.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, let's not skirt around the issue. There is, you know, alleged misgivings of Mr. Beckham that, you know, there are always rumours circulating that perhaps he's not totally faithful to Victoria. And I'm not going to touch on that because legally I can't. But let's just take that out of the equation, shall we?
Let's not pretend we have a legal team.
No.
It's really just us.
Yeah.
If we get sued, you guys, the listeners, are going to have to help us.
And also, you know, in a way, I hope he's very footloose and fancy free and that they've got an open relationship because that means we might all be in with a shot.
Would you? You would?
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, how could you not?
Are you mad?
It's Beckham. It's Beckham. You probably have to sign an NDA before you do anything, though.
I would sign my life away. I'd give him, you know, my life savings, aka my overdraft. And also, Beckham, you know, it's easy to dismiss him, stuff like that, but I think he's one of the most mainstream people that you are still not embarrassed to absolutely love.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true, yeah.
I also think, you know, he did a lot for men's, you know, toxic masculinity and stuff like that. I mean, he came out in the sarong in, I think it was like 1998, and everyone was like, oh my God, he's wearing a skirt. And like, for somebody who actually was extremely shy at the time, like, he's not so much now, but when you see the early interviews of him and Victoria, he's so shy and he's so like quiet and stuff like that. But he was happy to, like, you know, bleach his hair and wear a skirt and like push the boundaries.
He had all the haircuts.
And I love his influence on pop culture. I love that I used to like go to the swimming pool on a Saturday and see little lads with like Mohicans.
Yeah, everyone, I remember so clearly, everyone at primary school, all the boys had his haircut. Whatever his haircut was, they would have it.
There are so few male figures who can do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Obviously, there are a handful of female celebrities who, whatever decade you're looking at, they're like, oh, what they do, the young girls are doing.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It so rarely happens with boys.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that influence on like the day-to-day working class culture that he had, and the fact that he just seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah. Do you think he's clever?
No.
Okay.
But I don't think he needs to be. Like, he was a great footballer. He's a good person. He does a lot for charity.
I think he is clever.
I don't think he's as thick as people think he is, but right, I don't think he's clever.
But presumably his kind of, you know, his PR is done by someone else, right? And his kind of like...
Yeah, of course. But I think he's got instinctual knowledge of what it takes to be a brand and a celebrity, but also someone that everybody loves.
Yeah, because what's he been doing? He quit football a couple of years ago.
He quit football, no.
Because he went to LA Galaxy, didn't he?
He quit football about 4 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago.
And what's he been doing since then?
Well, I actually wrote a piece for Shortlist that never got published because I think it was just...
too gushing.
It was too much like, you just want to write about David Beckham. But they did let me write it, and it was called David Beckham is Bored. Because I think ever since he quit football, bless him, he just doesn't know what to do with himself. So, like, he's launched a whiskey, he launched Hague Club. He's bloody bought a football team from Miami, and that's what he's overdoing now. He's setting up an entirely brand new football club, which is a giant job. But he just wants something to do. Like, he's got OCD. I don't know if people know that.
I remember seeing that from a Jonathan Ross interview he did, which I often watch when I'm hungover, that long Jonathan Ross interview he did.
Yes.
It's lovely. Yeah. When he talks about how his wife is still posh in his phone.
Oh!
It's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
And also, the Beckhams love each other so much on Instagram. Like, the whole family, I mean. Like, the kids and everything. And I've served the kids in a restaurant. I used to be a waitress, and they were in there with Gordon Ramsay, his wife, and his kids. And they were the nicest, most polite, genuine kids. Like, considering... They had no staff there, no bodyguards, nothing. They were just out for, like, burger and chips. And they were like... Please may I have this? And I was like, yes, you can.
See, this is the thing about the Beckhams. Obviously, you know, when you live in London, you work in the media, you come across your fair share of people who have, you know, been around famous people, even in the smallest way. And you talk to people about James Corden, for example, and almost everyone's got a terrible story.
Oh, it's horrendous.
But if you talk to people about any of the Beckhams, even Posh, who obviously has a very austere kind of profile, they're like the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah. And that's why I find it so weird that James Corden and David Beckham are really good friends. But I think it's the thing of, you know, the Queen thinks the world smells of fresh paint because everyone's just painted it. David Beckham thinks James Corden is nice because James Corden is nice to David Beckham.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think James Corden's nice to a lot of people. I think he's just crapped a lot of women, apparently.
Yeah. And, like, people that...
Unfortunately, women are people.
Yes.
As we found in recent studies.
Very inconvenient. Yes,
as was revealed in 2017. men universally sort of, especially in this country and maybe not so much Europe or whatever, but British men love him. Like, a lot of straight men don't have any qualms with, like, really, really admiring him, talking about how much they love him, talking about how good he looks all the time. And I asked a man why he thinks men love David Beckham so much. I asked Carl Palmer, who is a big fan of the podcast, and who I've worked with regularly, and who often posts similar posts to me about how much he loves David Beckham. He said, it started with the way he recovered from the setback of the sending off. Of course, the very famous when he was sent off against Argentina, and everybody said if he hadn't have been sent off, we would have won the game and we would have gone through in the World Cup.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, me neither.
What?
Yeah. When was this? You have to presume less knowledge about David Beckham.
So we were playing against Argentina in the World Cup. I'm not exactly sure of the year. I think it was around... It might have been 98, actually. It was 98, sorry. Beckham got tackled and he was on the floor and it face down. And the guy who tackled him was stood behind him. And Beckham kicked his lower leg up and it hit the guy. And the guy dived to the ground. I mean, it was barely a touch. But because the ref just saw David Beckham kick his foot and the guy hit the ground, David Beckham got sent off.
Right. Did he do it on purpose?
I don't know. I think he just sort of meant it as a bit of a push. But nothing
but
like
a sending
off. You can't
do that with footballers.
Exactly, because the guy just went to the floor.
Right.
Beckham got sent off. Beckham was known for free kicks. He was the saviour of the games. He could take a penalty. He could do like any set pieces. He was the one. He was the star, even in 98. And he got sent off, and then we lost the game, and he got blamed for it. And he went from basically this star on the rise of what he is now. Mm-hmm. But the nation hated him. The Sun printed his face on the front with a dartboard, I think. There was effigies of him.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. Considering the next time we went through to the World Cup was when he broke his metatarsal, and the Sun had like rub his magic foot on the front of the paper, and like everyone was like pray for the foot and all this stuff, and he scored the last minute equaliser for the Euros so we could go through to the against Greece, and he scored he was then a hero again. But he like
very,
he's talked
very
about
Southgate, isn't it?
Really Southgate. Like, he's talked about how low he was, how it really, really affected him. I mean, seeing effigies of yourself by England fans,
that's horrible.
That's horrendous. You know, he was like public enemy number one because he'd lost us the World Cup, which obviously he hadn't, but like...
And there was always that thing as well, when he was doing badly in football for any reason, that they people would use his public profile and the way he liked to explore fashion. He seems to genuinely like his own girlfriend. All that stuff. They sort of use that to sort of demasculate him.
Yeah, exactly.
Emasculate him, sorry.
And in a way, I think he's been really strong with that. He's always been like, I'll wear what I want. I'm going to experiment with my hair. I'm
going
to marry a pop star who I sought out and like always fancied. And I want to have a family really young and I've always wanted that and I want my kids to be brought. You know, he has retained like a really strong
sense of self.
Yeah
that's
despite
true.
The fact that like, a lot of footballers just like, oh, I'll just do whatever.
I know. Yeah. So that's the thing when you people say like, oh, you know, Beckham's a dunce or whatever, or he's not clever. But like, maybe he's not
academic.
Book smart or academic or whatever, but he clearly has a very strong sense of purpose and self. And you have to have a huge amount of intelligence on some level
Absolutely.
To do that.
He's got like a lot of social intelligence. I think he wants to learn a lot of stuff. Apparently he could almost speak fluent Spanish when he was at Real Madrid, but he never did it in public for fear that he would get one thing wrong and then he would be ridiculed.
Aww.
Which, you know, because everyone said he was stupid or whatever.
And he loves Lego.
And he loves Lego.
Does he?
Yeah. I just love like Dad Beckham now. Like he loves his kids so much. He's like semi-retired. He's building them Lego stuff.
Aww.
He's discovered gifts on Instagram stories.
The biggest gift to womanhood ever was when Harper was a really small baby and he was carrying around the place.
Oh my God, I can't even talk about that. Obviously, my uterus actually like jumped out. And like,
I know. Like fit men holding babies, obviously always great. Fit men holding their tiny daughters.
Oh.
And they've waited so long for their daughters.
A little girl.
Gender's never been more important.
Oh God, he just wanted a little girl to spoil.
It's too much, lads. Too much.
Yes. Yeah, so to go back, now that I've explained that to you, Carl said it started with the way he recovered from the setback of the sending off and the way the country turned on him. He stood firm against it and won people back around him with his footballing talent. Then, as he's retired from football, he's been pivotal in things like the Olympic bid and he's moulded himself fully into the nation's dad. He's flash, but not in your face. He's an idiot, yet a genius. He's a brand that it's okay to be a fan of. Plus, he's hair goals, fashion goals, dad goals, life goals.
Wow, that's very poetic.
I just feel happy when I see him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And there was an interest. I couldn't find it today. I was trying to find the evidence of it, but I did watch a documentary on sports psychology once that was saying when Beckham, because when he got a little bit older and he was never the best player ever, but he just trained so hard at free kicks that was his thing. He could absolutely always guarantee a goal if we could get a free kick, essentially. So I was trying to find this study today. That I saw years ago that said basically even when he wasn't he shouldn't have really been in the team, in the England team, he was kept in it because if he ran on as a sub, the whole place
atmosphere
would lift.
Oh, wow. He was like, good for morale.
He was basically like a sports psychologist's dream because and even when he was retired from English football, I don't know if you remember, it wasn't that long ago, it was about maybe 8 years ago. I think it was at the World Cup maybe 8 years ago. They let him go on the sidelines in a grey and lilac suit. And just sort of like encourage the team.
Aww.
He had like no real role, but he just wanted to be there so much. And he loves football. He loved playing football. Like you could say he was a brand and all this, whatever. You can say all that. That's all completely true. And he's like released a perfume or whatever. But he absolutely loved being a football player. And he was like so proud to play for England. And he didn't want to give up, but he had to. So,
David Beckham, the best of us all.
I know. I just think he is. I'm sorry, guys. I just think like whenever.
Do you know what I think as well? I think how you know that someone's not just a celebrity, but they're an icon, is when anyone, regardless of how old they are or what gender they are or what their persuasion is, could have them as their phone background.
Yes.
Do you know? And Nan could have David Beckham as her phone background, or an 8-year-old boy
like,
could.
Yep. Yeah, if my boyfriend had it, I'd be like,
great.
Oh, I've got a boyfriend.
Yeah,
be nice.
Yeah.
but yeah, also just like, that's absolutely fine. I mean, you didn't ask me many questions in the end because I just...
Let's have a quick fire.
Okay, quick fire. Go on.
Oh, first pet's name.
Oh, no idea.
First girlfriend.
Oh, don't know.
Are you that much of an expert?
Favourite food.
Just had a few wanks.
Favourite food is pie and mash from Bethnal Green and jellied eels.
Ooh.
I feel like you just said that to keep a certain journalist happy.
No, honest to God.
Favourite book?
Oh, I don't think he reads books, Hannah.
Favourite TV show? Seems like a Wire kind of guy.
He's always posting like on his Instagram stories about watching action films. He's always watching like a Jason Statham film and being like, this film is really good. And I'm like, David, why are you filming it? Just watch it.
Favourite child?
Ooh.
I think it's Harper, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just feel like of British culture, David Beckham is the Queen and Posh is the Prime Minister.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, she's passing all the laws of, like, what's cool and what's not cool, of what's acceptable in our culture.
Yeah.
But everyone wants a picture with the Queen, you know?
And, like, I feel a bit sorry for Posh as well. Like, she's tried so hard to be accepted into fashion. She's tried really, really hard
she
to
is,
change
though, isn't she?
She is, but I still feel like there's that, you know, that sort of part of her inside of her that's just like, I'm just trying to be with the cool people. She is cool now, but like there's still that inside her own mind, if you know what I mean. Mm. And then David Beckham this year got appointed onto the British Fashion Council and also has his own label at like Men's Fashion Week. And it's just like,
he's
just effortless.
And that's sexism for you.
I know.
Come on, that is what that is.
Oh, it is. Right? But it's not his fault.
No, it's not their fault. It's
nothing is
fault.
His fault, Caroline. He can do no wrong. All praise the Lord and Saviour, so. David Beckham.
Now, a few years ago, if a woman wanted to have sex with a man, all she had to do was sit through a double showing of Saving Private Ryan and Das Boot. Now, however, it's all about enjoying horror movies in an intelligent and artistic way, and that's what today's Smart Lesson is all about.
Before, you could at least say that you didn't want to watch someone get their eyeballs dug out with a hot spoon, but now horror movies are, like, respectable, and there's no excuses for it.
So that's why I've invited Cartoon Network writer and comedy writer-performer from Kill the Beast, Natasha Hodgson, to teach us how to watch horror. Tasha's credits include The Amazing World of Gumball, Bravest Warriors, and her own play, Director's Cut, which is at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival the 21st, the 27th of August at the Pleasance Theatre. Hi, Tash.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello. Just really pleased this has been framed as a mission to get everyone more sex.
Yes.
I'm fully into that.
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
But yeah, I've been, because of my theatre, horror, all my theatre company stuff is horror comedy. And so after a childhood and teenhood of absolutely abhorring watching horror films, I've now spent the last 7 years watching a whole bunch. So yeah, I feel qualified to let you know the ones that you should go for and avoid. But like, was this the same? Were you also just hated watching horror films as
yeah,
as a teen?
I never really watched them that much. And when I did, I was just like, why do people enjoy these?
Yeah.
This isn't fun.
Yeah, why make yourself physically and emotionally uncomfortable for 2.5 hours and not know what's going to happen? And you might say horrible things that you can't unsee. Like, but what's the joy there?
Well, this is the thing. But apparently it's like, because I was reading about, like, why?
Why?
Hey!
And obviously it's because basically the stuff in your brain that triggers pleasure is basically the same as pain. It's just like with slightly more dopamine if it's pleasure. And people have different receptors, and so which is why some people get a load of kicks out of watching horror films, because the dopamine is like super triggered. They're like, I'm loving this death. And other people are just like, but why not the flowers? Why not?
Why
they have
intelligent character based comedies?
Yeah.
It is a bit like self-harm for me, actually, the relationship, because I have a really vivid imagination. I get so scared. Not during the film, bad enough. After the film, worse.
Yeah.
But I do sort of, me and my best friend do have like a little thing where every time a really horrible one comes out, we'll go and see it together. Because it's apparently the same thing that bonds you, where you have shared trauma.
Well, yeah. Aww. And that's it. And that's also why people like watching them as well. Because it's like, it's a very like rowdy. It's like the same as comedy, like in that way, in that like, it's very much a collective experience when you're watching a horror film, in that you're just grasping at any human being to show you that you're alive and not going to die in this experience.
Yeah, which like, apparently is a good thing. I think if you watch horror on your own, you're a psychopath.
Yeah, right? It's like horror or comedy, I feel like. If you're just on your own, although I watch comedy on my own all the time, but fine. So. But like, yeah, just sitting on your own, just cracking on The Woman in Black, just about of an evening. It's like, what's your deal?
I honestly couldn't do that. I'd have to go to stay in a hotel if I watched that on my own.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be able to stay
in
my house.
The room where it happened, even though it didn't happen there.
It's funny though that you talk about horror and comedy, because sort of one befits the other, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. This is why I ended up sort of watching like classic horror and modern horror, because the thing about horror and comedy is that they're basically the same, in that it's all about tension and release, and it's all build-up and release, and the sort of like music of both of those things runs through. But I think in terms of watching them, if you are like me, scared all the time, I'm so jumpy as well. I'm like, I saw a bag once and just jumped.
Like, I jump when I open a door and there's someone behind it. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, I'm just opening the door to a person who's supposed to be there. I'm just like, no way! So I think like there are rules you have to follow, which is ideally you're watching it with someone who has seen the film before.
Oh, really?
Oh
yes, I find that very effective. Yeah,
very effective. And someone that you trust who who, because basically what you want to do is you need to respect the atmosphere of the film. So there's no, you can't watch it in like broad daylight. No. People who say to you like, hey, just watch in the day when you've got like cereal. And
no.
You're like, no, like that is completely.
Commit or quit.
Yeah, exactly. Commit. Yeah. Like, show some goddamn respect to John Carpenter. So yeah, you have to watch it at night. But I think it's permissible to kind of say to get rid of your anxiety, watch the film with someone who's watched it before, who can before, because usually in a good horror film, there's like three bits, right? There's like the bit. That's the bit that's the horrible bit. And like in a good horror film, there's like maybe, three or four of those, the worst bits. And using this person's that you trust judgment, I think you get a couple of passes to be like, for them to be like, just, you know, in 10 seconds, something very bad is going to happen. Like, I've employed this technique to very helpful situations before, watching It, the new Stephen King.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So you're sitting there with your friend who's the nice person and they've watched the film before. What else can you do to enjoy the experience?
Try and mitigate the experience. Well, it really, really depends on whether what you want to do is enjoy it in its full flow, which is kind of like you just have to
hunker
down and surrender.
Yeah.
That is, as a coward, not my method. I think what you can do is just kind of like, the cheat sheet is the bad stuff almost always happens in the nighttime scenes. So just whenever there's a daytime scene, just enjoy yourself,
relax.
You know?
Yeah.
Get yourself a snack. Have a nice time. Like, that is your time to shine.
You're safe now.
You're safe now. And I think as well, like, I really just don't think you should feel bad about, like, having an item that you can put in front of your face.
Yeah, would you advocate hiding behind pillows?
I genuinely, if that is what it takes for you to get through this film, I always feel safer, because I think often it's kind of like, hey, you can just close your eyes, but there's something that feels like, when you have such a visceral response to horror, which everyone does, which is part of the reason it's so great, like, you just literally want to cower.
Yeah.
And I think sort of really, there's almost the kind of the drama of that and the kind of play of it and sort of really leaning into the fact that you're already scared somehow kind of makes it less frightening, because then you're sort of entering into a game whereby you're really scared and there's a cowering and there's a cushion and someone's having to put their arm around you. Like, I think sort of playing up how ridiculous the situation
is. Yeah, kind of leaning into it.
Yeah, leaning into it completely and not being afraid to do that, because I think the worst thing you can do is A, be around people who don't know that you're scared of horror films and that you and trying that the whole time to feel like you're okay. Because I think all that does is like go on and on and make your fear so much more like squared, because you're also worrying about what other people are thinking of you. Mm.
I also think if you do that, you're more likely to ingest the fear later. Like, you'll have more nightmares, you'll have more uneasy feelings about it. If you like try and like have this this outward appearance of being fine in the room, then tomorrow on the bus you'll be like, he's going to murder me.
You're just vibrating.
Bus is
stress.
On the way to hell.
I would also say eat something fun while you're watching it.
And eat something beforehand as well. I would say like have a meal before you watch the film, and also then busy yourself throughout with a snack that you can.
Yeah,
I'd like quite a complicated snack would be my
good tip.
I think have a meal that you can sort of like go back to as and when you need to do that thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh guys, I'm just gonna, they're going up the stairs, are they? I'm just gonna go get an olive guac and some chips.
Here's anyone? I'm going out for Domino's collection.
Don't pause it. No.
In the next town along. Yeah. So just honestly, I'm gonna be.
She's
wild.
Looking for the monster, but she hasn't switched the light on, so it's all going really well.
Yeah.
Would you say there's a difference between watching a horror film at the cinema and at home, and which would you?
What are the
differences between them?
Always at home. Never cinema.
Oh, really?
I mean, again, like, I'm sure for actual people who know and love horror films in a proper way, they would say the cinema experience is one. But I just feel like, again, it's all about like mitigating your natural anxiety whilst still embracing and enjoying the experience. And I think putting yourself in a situation whereby you're going to embarrass you feel like you might be embarrassed or that you're trapped or that it's just really fucking overwhelming is just a recipe for disaster. Whereas like if you're at your home, you know where all the walls are, they're not going to jump out. Probably no killers are there. Whereas in cinema, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah,
like, it's just, but again, it's that balance of you do it in your house, but you do it at nighttime. You do it with all the things drawn. You do it with a few candles. Like, it's sort of creating for yourself like a little illusion that you are completely safe and happy with, versus sort of entering into a sort of society situation that has dictated all those things for
That's
you and could add an element of stress.
That's interesting, because for me, like, I think I've only ever seen like one horror film at the cinema, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was called. But what I quite liked about it was that I knew I was in a cinema, and I kind of knew that like it was a performance in a way, whereas if you're at home, your guard is down, you're kind of like, oh, I'm just at home, this is just normal life. And so it kind of almost like the film kind of creeps in to you as a being more easily. Whereas in the cinema, I was kind of like, there's me and there's the screen and there's all these people.
Yeah.
And there's also the pageantry of everyone being frightened together. It's very like being on a ride.
Yeah. Also, you can't go to bed on your own if you watch it in your own house because you're like, it's upstairs.
Yeah, this is the thing. My other tip would be watch something funny.
Oh, completely.
After.
Oh, I always do that.
Always. Like, even if you don't think you're that scared, you'll be like, yeah, whatever. Like, I would always, I mean, I my go-to with my theatre company, and they'll love me for telling this, is we watch an episode of Don't Tell the Bride.
Oh, brilliant.
That's perfect.
It's just so good. You know, it's got everything
Nothing
you need.
Nothing scary happens there.
Nothing scary. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it is a horror film all itself.
Yeah.
But in more manageable ways.
So tell us a little bit more about Director's Cut and what people can expect from it.
So the new show, which is going to Edinburgh, is very sort of, it's inspired by all the kind of this kind of stuff. It's set on a B-movie 70s horror
set. I like it already.
Yeah. It's actually sort of, they're sort of filming the sequel to Rosemary's Baby. Although it's never sort of, it doesn't really matter if you know, but in our heads and hearts, they're filming the sequel to Rosemary's Baby. But when they're about to finish filming it, the lead actress storms off set after an argument and dies.
Oh.
And so they have to scramble to kind of replace her for the final few shots. And that's sort of where the film, where the show begins. And then it's just, it's about the vengeance of this spirit of the lead actress who doesn't want this film to get finished because it's so dreadful. And it's like, this sort of haunted comedy where it's like fast and things going wrong as this ghost desperately tries to fuck up this film with a like harassed director trying his very best to get it finished.
Wow.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's really, really great, guys. You'll be frightened as often as you are tickled.
And if people can't make it to Edinburgh, how can they find out more about your work elsewhere?
They can follow Kill the Beast. It's kill_beast on Twitter and Instagram. We have the Facebook and all that kind of nonsense. And hopefully we'll be bringing the show back to London and around the UK in the next year or so. So exciting. As long as you've got no plans for a year or so, hopefully you can see it soon.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Go forth and watch your scary films and try not to piss yourselves.
Well,
my advice.
I can't promise that.
No, you can't. No,
I'm about to piss myself right now. I'm so full of lime-flavoured water.
Well, thanks for listening to today's episode, and thank you to Natasha Hodgson for coming in and telling us all about horror films. If you'd like to hear more from Tash, our full conversation will be in the bonus episode coming out this Saturday. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do rate and review and also subscribe.
If you dare. All work and no podcast makes something something Homer go crazy.
Thanks to Harry Harris for our jingles, Gavin Day for our logo, and Soho Radio Studios for our recording space. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye. Forever.
Mwah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.